Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Matt Leary and Steve Missler. Maine will be joining the states calling the second Monday in October Indigenous Peoples Day rather than Columbus Day. Governor Mills signed that piece of legislation Friday, and there are others that we'll talk about later that are heading for her desk. But first, as Donald Trump's presidency has unfolded, I've heard from time to time from people who've said Maine got there first, electing a chief executive, Paula Page, who broke political norms with his bluntness and unusually combative style. Trump, this week, responded to the Mueller report by blocking again release of his tax returns, refusing to let one aide respond to a congressional subpoena, and urging his former attorney, Don McGahn, to do likewise. Steve Missler, is this another case of Trump imitating LePage?
Well, I don't know if he's intentionally imitating Governor LePage, but he's certainly following the same trajectory, if you will. I mean, the part about blocking testimony from people within his administration before congressional oversight committees really stood out to me because Governor LePage did that after about a year or two into his governorship here. And the result of that was really interesting. I think for a while, Democrats in the legislature were fought it, and they attempted to bring in commissioners. And what Governor LePage did is sometimes he would just show up himself and in lieu of the commissioner. And I think over time, what you saw happen, and this is what I'll be really interested to see if it's replicated on the federal level, is Democrats kind of gave up. They kind of gave up their oversight role in a lot of ways because they knew that the governor was not going to supply his commissioners because he basically said they're not allowed to testify in front of oversight committees and unless I give them approval to do so. And, you know, while they didn't completely disappear, they were scarce when there was a controversy. You have to wonder how Democrats in Congress will react. I mean, they have arguably more power than the legislative Democrats did here. But it'll be interesting to see if over time, if Trump is to be elected to a second term, if they just sort of surrender that oversight role because it's an exercise in futility.
Hey, Mal, you know, Steve likes to point out that, of course, LePage was the only governor he covered until just recently, but you've been there a lot longer. Any other governor behave like that?
In a word, no. In fact, I like to use the phrase, before we had Trump, we had LePage, when I'm at various national conventions. And inevitably, people ask about Governor LePage, even though he's no longer in office. And, you know, I'm just waiting for Trump to start saying, well, we're not going to send anybody to any of these hearings. We want you to submit your questions in writing. Because if you recall, that was the last phase we had from LePage, was he said, you know, you want testimony from Commissioner X? Well, you submit questions in writing and we'll submit answers in writing, and that's all we're going to do.
Yeah. As Steve was pointing out a moment ago, though, legislative Democrats don't have some of the tools congressional Democrats do, I don't think.
The Congress does not have absolute power of subpoena. You have a real issue, constitutional issue, about a member, about Congress issuing a subpoena to someone that's under the president's power, the executive branch. He can fight back and say, no, this subpoena is illegal because of separation of powers. Of course, we have very limited subpoena powers among state legislatures. Only the Government Oversight Committee has it right now on a regular basis. So there is some differences there, but the reality is there's going to be a real battle over every one of these subpoenas, and it's going to come down to a separation of powers. And, you know, the folks on the Supreme Court are going to get tired of settling the issue.
Well, to be fair, it's not only the executive branch that tries to keep prying eyes at bay. Here in Maine, of course, the legislature does some of its most important work in secret. But, Mal, it does look like journalists who cover the State House have at least convinced the legislative powers to be to renew access to at least the State House itself sometimes.
Yeah, it's really kind of going back to what we had prior to about a year ago, if I recall correctly. We've always had access. In fact, some of us who have been here long enough used to have offices in the State House itself. Mm. I remember clearly when I was working for United Press International, having Governor Longley show up on the weekend, because I do the weekend shift as being the most junior member of the staff, and he would pop in with a press release personally, you know, with his bodyguard trailing. I mean, it was a far different time. The building, in fact, I would argue was probably more secure then than it is now, in that to get into the building after hours, you had to go to a phone, pick up the phone, which was connected to a security guard who could see you on a TV camera. And if he didn't recognize you, you didn't get in the building.
But at least you can now get back into the Statehouse building any hour of the day that you think you need to, even though you may ultimately find yourself facing a closed hearing door.
That access was, a year ago, was suddenly blocked. We had had that access for as long as I've been covering the Statehouse, right? We're credentialed reporters. We lease space at the Capitol complex. We undergo background checks. And we have key cards that tell anybody who wants to know where we are when we go into the Statehouse or another otherwise secure facility. That building is probably one of the most heavily surveilled buildings in the state. There are cameras all over the place. In fact, when the legislative council was poised to potentially restrict our access at all hours, at that same meeting, there was an agenda item to add 14 more security cameras. So, you know, a very heavily surveilled place was about to get even more surveilled. I think what's important about this is that the press was able to fight back and gain the access that it had previously had up until this policy change or policy enforcement. And that access is important for a lot of reasons, the most important of which is probably the state budget, which at this point is a proposal worth over $8 billion. And the decisions that are made in negotiating that budget are often done behind closed doors. Now, we can't always get into those doors, but we can at least be outside of the doors to ask questions of the people that are making those decisions. And that was what was at stake up until yesterday. And I'm, you know, very happy, and as I'm sure Mal is, we were able to convince the legislative leaders to restore the access that we once had. It will be very important in the months and weeks ahead. We are in a budget year. There are going to be negotiations, and we will be able to be there.
Mal.
And I can personally attest to the fact that sometimes the committee slips into a meeting without realizing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are concentrated, the members of appropriations, trying to get a budget together, and usually they're in their little partisan caucuses arguing what's going to be the Republican position, what's going to be the Democrat position. But when the chairs and leads get together, under state law, that's de facto an open meeting, and they have to open those, and I've been in many, many, many of those meetings. And I can tell you, those one weekend I went in, I had been told previously, in all faith by the leaders of both parties, we're just doing partisan caucuses. We're not going to get together. I saw everybody here, so I thought I'd just stop in and see what was going on. It was a Sunday afternoon, by the way. I went in, and one of the co-chairs said, oh, we're glad you're here. We're going to have a chairs and leads meeting because we're going to start working on this part of the budget. That was spontaneous. They didn't plan it, but if I hadn't gone in there to check and see what they were doing to make sure they were indeed just caucusing, I wouldn't have gotten that story, and the people wouldn't have known about that particular debate on that part of the budget.
Yeah, I would just add one more thing to this, which is, you know, I understand that, you know, lawmakers, as Mal said, can sometimes be unwittingly drifting into a public meeting, which we have a right to observe and attend, as does any member of the public, by the way. But there's also, I think, a natural inclination for people who are negotiating to want to not do that in public because they can get testy. And if the press is there, they have an audience, and maybe there is a tendency to be more performative in their negotiation rather than being, I don't know, productive. And so I understand that, but we have a job to do, and that's to tell people what is going on with their government, and especially when that pertains to spending their money. And so, again, just to reiterate, that's why what happened yesterday was a very, very important thing.
Well, the legislature, as I mentioned, is beginning to send bills to the governor. They include a measure to end so-called food shaming. Steve, what's that?
This is one of a list of bills where I think on the outset they feel like they might be appeasing narrow constituencies or small ones, maybe ones we don't think about every day, but constituencies that have been out out of the loop and maybe not able to get some of the things that they want accomplished over the previous 8 years. In this case, you're talking about students who cannot afford lunch at the going rate. What this proposal would do is basically make it so that schools and school districts can't identify them in such a way that they could be shamed because they are receiving free and reduced lunch or for owing money on a bill, for example. So districts and schools will now not be able to do that. I'm not sure to the extent that that actually occurs. I think most schools are probably pretty sensitive to this topic. But that's just one of many proposals this session where constituencies that have sort of been on the outside looking in over the previous 8 years suddenly have a voice, and they're getting rewarded for that through signatures by Governor Janet Mills.
Mal, there was also a special moment in the State House as the legislature took up another bill, this one to make Maine's laws gender neutral in their language.
Correct. It was quite amazing to see the governor and the chief justice together in the Judiciary Committee testifying in support of legislation. No one that I talked with, including John Martin, could remember anything like that ever happened. You've had the chief justice testify. You've had governors testify before. Governor LePage, as Steve mentioned, quite frequently showed up to testify in lieu of a commissioner. But to have the leaders of two branches of government coming to the third to testify was somewhat unique. What they've done under this legislation as it's come out of Judiciary Committee would start the process of changing all of Maine's statutes. It would start with the governor and the judges, but would direct the revisor's office, those are the folks who write state laws, that over the next several years they would go through all 39 titles of state laws and correct all of those references, which are very gender biased. Many of them, of course, going back, you know, hundreds of years in terms of when they were actually first put on the law books. The purpose is to change all of those over a period of time, starting with the references to the governor and references to the judiciary.
And finally, Joe Biden makes 20 Democrats say they're running for president. Mal, are any of them starting to build political connections to Maine's legislative leaders?
I couldn't find any. I talked with Governor Mills about it, and she said she's gotten a few emails, but she's received no phone calls. She's received no attempts by any of those candidates to get her endorsement, even though she, of course, is the leader of the Democratic Party in this state. And quite frankly, she says, it's way too early. She says, I don't even want to look at these people until after the legislative session. I'm too busy. And that was the refrain I got from other leaders like Speaker Sarah Gideon, who said, you know, I haven't heard from a single one of those 20 candidates, and I'm kind of happy about it because I'm really busy dealing with the legislature. And there's plenty of time to deal with these presidential forums that are going on and all of the campaigning that's going on after the legislative session is over. There doesn't seem to be much interest from those 20 candidates that are running to try to organize here in Maine, at least not yet.
Well, or at least not with legislative leaders. I suppose it's possible they may be doing some organization building in other places with lower down rank and file members of the parties.
These are the folks that you would expect to be contacted by the candidates because they have their own campaign organizations. They have their own set of contacts, particularly the governor. I mean, that's the one most surprising to me was, you know, she said, I got a few emails, Mal, and I thought, that's it. There's been no real contact. There's been no attempt to convince me to support any of them. She says, you know, I haven't heard much at all. And that is surprising considering she came off a very strong win as governor and has a very strong campaign organization in place from that election.
Mal Leary and Steve Missler, and that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. The Pulse podcast is posted each Friday afternoon, and you can access it anytime at mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Past podcasts are also available. The Pulse also airs Sundays on Weekend Edition, and we air an abbreviated version Mondays on Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Join us again soon.